If I don't speed train all the time, and it's almost the same feeling of if you go to the gym consistently, you're getting stronger, you're feeling good, then you don't work out for 3 weeks, and then you go, or 4 weeks, and then you go back into the gym, and all of a sudden the weight you used to move, you can't even lift it. And then you're trying to lift, a little bit less, and it hurts, but you're like, okay, wow, I'm weak.
This is the Tournament Code.
So, Jack, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the game of golf, and ultimately how you got into the sport of long drive.
Name's Jack Smith from Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm currently 25 years old, but my journey was grew up junior golf, played some competitive golf here and there. A lot of people in Shreveport grew up playing, so it was a very hot sport, especially with the talents of David Toms coming from Shreveport and Hal Sutton, two pro golfers to play here. And a couple years above me, you have Sam Burns, who's killing it on the tour. He's from here as well. And I got another buddy of mine, but grew up playing junior golf. Played, took it serious freshman year of high school until about senior year of high school, and decided to completely rebuild my swing with a coach I had named Jeff Jones. He had a great track record and really built players a powerful, consistent swing. So I went to him. I was like, I need to rebuild this. And he was like, yeah, this swing's a mess. I'm like, all right. So we rebuilt it. I was trying to play collegiate golf, but I think starting so late and taking it serious freshman year of high school, and I was not a prodigy, it wasn't something I was able to achieve so short notice, I guess within 3-4 years of high school. Because I was trying to, I wanted to play D1. That was like everybody's goal. But I also didn't play a ton of tournament golf. But once I got to the collegiate or to college, I just was so burned out on golf, I didn't want to touch a club forever. So once I graduated from high school, I didn't touch a club in college for 3 years. And then junior year of college, I got in a bad ski wreck. I hit a tree snowboarding like 58 miles per hour. I was just booking it down the mountain. But from the ski wreck, I didn't do anything for like a month after, just injured. And, my mom's like, you need to get back outside and do something to get some fresh air. And so I decided to pick golf back up because I used to play it, but I was burned out. And when I picked it back up, I was still ripping my driver 350 yards, 340 yards, 360 yards, but just fast. That was still kind of characteristic to my golf game. And a family friend of ours whose brother-in-law is Hal Sutton, the professional golfer, previously professional, he told me to go meet Hal and get him to fit me for a new driver. And so while we got fit for a driver, Hal was just kind of like, son, you know anybody that hits a 6-iron, 250 yards like you just did? And I was like, no, sir. But I didn't know any better. Honestly, I was kind of a dumb golfer. I just golfed. I didn't know distances and how far things meant. I just like, yeah, no, sir. And he goes, I didn't think so. He goes, that's insane. And that's when he suggested to me that I should look into competing in world long drive. And he goes, I know you're getting back into golf. You haven't played in forever. And I know you want to try to get better at golf. But he goes, you could probably make money doing long drive right now. And I was like, okay, I'll look into it, whatever. I don't know what this long drive thing is. I'm a golfer. I don't want to go whacking drivers, whatever. But I looked into it, graduated from LSU. And as I was graduating from LSU, just with a degree in biology, was in a fraternity, nothing, just prior average dude. I didn't play any college sports. Graduating from LSU, I competed in 3 amateur long drive events with my regular golf driver, and I won all 3. I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. This could be fun. And then graduating from LSU, my dad, I was applying to medical school. And in the midst of applying, though, this long drive stuff was, I did those 3 tournaments and was winning. And my dad and I were like, let's take a chance on it. Like, not many people get the opportunity to use a talent like this where you hit it far, because who knows where this could lead. You might not be well at it, but let's just try. So I used to say pulled my medical school application. I was waiting to hear back for interviews or whatever, but I kind of like cut that off and gave long drive a try. And first tournament as a professional, I got 6th place in their world championship. Under a smaller long drive tour. And the following year, I joined the world long drive tour. And that's kind of where my career just took off. I was injured in my first six events with a forearm injury as a rookie, so like I still didn't get a show face. The seventh event on tour, that was my rookie debut. I got tied fifth in that event, and I went 224 ball speed in my very first tournament, and everyone was like, "Who is this guy?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't even know who I am." That was nuts. You know, it blew me away. Second tournament, I got tied ninth. And third tournament, I got second place. And then the fourth tournament was our first event in 2023 back on the Golf Channel since COVID shut everything down. And I went on to win that event as a rookie, beating Martin Borgmeier, who was world number one at the time, in the semifinals. And then I beat Kyle Berkshire in the finals on TV. And that was like the big break for me. Everybody was like, that kind of put me on the map. I know I kind of rambled on, but that's my journey of just not being, you know, being sick of golf, didn't play it competitively really in my latter years, got back into it, had speed, but I didn't really know what to do with it, jumped in the long drive, had early success, and now I'm fortunately number two in the world. I'm trying to close in on world number one. I mean, it's just, I would have never thought I'd be here, you know, taking that chance.
That is awesome. It's cool to hear that. I have some follow-up questions on it. One thing we forgot to do is the Puffview Book sponsors us, so they keep the lights on. So I have to quickly note that we normally have an opening tee shot for them, which is a trivia question. Jack, do you have a trivia question prepared for us today?
I do. So there is only one PGA Tour player that averages over 190 ball speed. Who is it? And for reference to listeners at home, I think Jack just touched on that he was hitting 224, and there's only one player on the PGA Tour above 190. Who is that person?
Aldrich.
Pot guy.
Yeah, it's Aldrich. I don't know if it was hard enough, but
that was low-hanging fruit, so we didn't even let Jack answer it.
No, I mean he just had that victory, and I mean that dude's got a lot of effortless speed. I know him and Jake Knapp are these guys that kind of surprise you with their ball speed just by being very efficient with their mechanics, and a lot of people usually just throw brute force at a club and hope for speed, but you know, there's a reason they say slow is smooth and smooth is fast. That saying has been around forever because it really does mean something. So
Aldrich is impressive. I've played with him before, and no, he wasn't even going after it, but he just cracks it out there. It's pretty nasty. For your golf game, as you said, you had just had natural speed and a lot of strength. When it came to, you know, starting to get into long drive, though, how did your training change? And just to give you some background, one of the reasons this interview is interesting for us, obviously there's lots of things that go into tournament golf, and a lot of times we talk about, you know, golf tournaments and everything that goes into it, and obviously club head speed is something integral in terms of playing high level golf. It's easier if you have high speed and can hit it pretty darn, and it can hit it straight, and you having played college golf and then going on to do a world long drive, we're interested to learn about picking up speed. And again, one of the reasons it came up is you're talking with Chad Darby about speed. I'm working on getting to 130 by the end of the year. And so he said, "Oh, I know a guy who knows a little bit about some speed." So tell us a little bit about what getting world long drive speed was like compared to just being fast.
When I was first suggested it, my club head speed with my 45-inch gamer club was, I think I was 170 pounds, and my speed was, I think, like 133 to 135 miles per hour. And that's when they were like, "Hey, you should look into long drives." Like, I'll check it out. But a lot of that speed, I give credit to one, I just always whack the ball hard. You know, everyone's like, "You should probably slow down and play better golf." And I'm like, "No, I like hitting it really hard. I don't care if I shoot a 78, I'd rather do that." You know, little did I know it helped me in the latter years, but was about 133 club speed. I think a lot of that came from the swing I built with a coach named Jeff Jones growing up. We completely rebuilt my swing to be a very repetitive, strong swing that allowed me to just turn, and just once I got set, I could just let it eat. And it was like such a repeatable swing under pressure. I mean, maybe like a 2-degree spin axis draw. Like, I mean, it was a swing built for pressure and speed. And then when it came to long drive, after it was suggested, I started training for speed with speed training. And I researched, you know, what are people doing? I went to the number one long drive coach who I still use, Bobby Peterson, who coaches the best in the world. And he taught me how to train my body for speed, like train my nervous system to fire faster, the same as you go to the gym. You can work out, you know, just lift lightweight, kind of get a pump, or you can push heavyweight like a power lifter and like force your body to adapt to higher strength and then keep getting stronger and stronger. And so that's what we did with speed, pushing speed. We taught my nervous system to fire faster and faster. And I was speed training like 3 times a week. I'd do about 50 to 75 balls in a simulator as fast as I could. Like my goal was to turn on the ball with my body, everything I had, mechanics, just as fast as I could. Whether I hit the ball well or not, I didn't care. This was a teaching moment for my body to adapt, to get faster, and then I could worry about correcting impact later. But once I started learning how to get faster, I learned how to like get my hands to release a little bit better, more efficiently. I think quicker hands was a big thing because I used to just hold the club off and turn on it and hold the face really stable. But now I'm able to get speed in my hands way faster to release the club head with more energy and effort and then still control ball flight. But I was able to jump my club speed within a year. I went from 133 miles per hour to, with a long drive club, like 155 miles per hour. And I hit like a top speed of like 230 something. 238.7 miles per hour. That actually was with a club speed of 160.8 miles per hour. So my speed kind of came out of nowhere. But just learning to move more efficiently, I definitely hit the gym. I definitely made sure I stayed flexible and loose. I didn't want to have a body that wasn't able to get in the positions required to swing fast. And then I'm trying to like swing through positions, you know, because statically I can sit there and hold my hands in a certain spot and be like, okay, I'm going to try to get right here. But then I go to swing and subconsciously you're just swinging with muscle memory. My body won't let me get there because it physically can't unless I forcefully push it there. And so it's just going to, you'll spend days just trying to get there and you never will because your body doesn't allow it. So I just did everything I could from pliability, definitely hit the gym to protect my core for speeding up. I didn't want to hurt myself, and just training for speed, doing those sessions where like I literally would almost swing to break my back. Like I just like, I don't care what happens. I'm swinging as hard as I can. And I mean, there was days where I'd swing at top speed. I'd PR the next day, I'd get close to the PR. Then like a week later, I'd be fresh and I'd be like 5 miles per hour slower. And I'm like, I'm fresh. This is stupid. But I just kept beating at it. And the speed will definitely come if you trust it. It's one of the The saying trust the process plays a huge role if you ever want to speed train and get faster. Cause like, I don't really think we have a good judge on nervous system recovery health. Cause like if you're sore with a workout, you can feel the lactic acid, you feel the muscle sore, you try to lift weight, it's heavy. It's just like, oh, I'm not as strong. For like the nervous system, it's kind of hard to judge how fresh it is for training again or how snappy it is. I guess it could be a word as well, but just working around all that. Definitely learning efficiency.
I know you mentioned you did a lot of flexibility work and speed training work, obviously. What kind of weightlifting protocol are you doing for your long drive career?
So I still do just basic weightlifting. Like I'll go in, I do bench, I do incline dumbbells. Like I do a full heavy workout. It changes between off season and in season, but I do my basic heavy workouts, but then depending on the day, if it's, I'll do chest and back on Mondays. Tuesdays, I do legs and core. And when I do the core, I have a device called Pure Torque. And it's like this, you anchor to a cable machine and you can anchor it against your chest and turn your body. And it helps like create, helps you pull the weight stack with your torso and like your rotational power. And that helped me train for just, I guess, more core strength in the rotational planks. It's hard to translate strength you have from the vertical and horizontal planes with pushing and pulling weight. And then, okay, now translate all that strength to rotating really fast and syncing all the timing up. So having that core device was really helpful. But at a minimum, I'm always doing like a basic full-on hard workout for whatever muscle group. And then in there, I also throw in maybe the mobility training with medicine balls, and like stability, strength, stuff like that. But I never truly have a day where it's just like lightweight workouts like that unless it's in season, and it's more of like a maintenance period for my strength and size and flexibility. So
how much would you contribute your success to your raw strength? And then how much would you contribute your success to like neurological system and just being able to trick your body into going super fast?
I would probably contribute like 75 to 80% of my success with speed to my swing mechanics and actually pushing speed. 100%. That's 75 to 80%. 20%, I think strength matters, but I see so many cases of people that look like string beans and they're moving the ball way faster than the jacked giant guy who's pretty flexible. I see it all the time. People just putting brute force into a swing. How big and strong can we get? And how hard can we swing the club? And they just don't always get results they're looking for. It's not like an exponential increase in speed with effort unless your swing is like perfectly efficient. You'll see the more you put in, the more you put out. But everybody's swing is different. Everybody's swing, including mine, has flaws to where if every time I swing, I get out of the swing 90% efficiency. That'd probably be pretty good if I only had 10% mess ups. But if I had a 90% efficient swing and 10% is lost due to bad mechanics, if I put even more effort, I'm losing even more in that next swing because that's 10% of even more effort. So like the more I put in, the more I actually lose. And some people just have terrible swing mechanics and they just keep trying to think the answer is just hitting the gym harder, swinging harder, and they just don't get the results they look for. And they will honestly end up leading to injury, which is a huge killer.
What would you say specifically are some of the things that you do mechanically well that allows you to create so much speed?
I probably want to say the use of my legs and hips. I know some people that have, you know, a lot of ground force reaction, but the use of my ground forces are very balanced between vertical and horizontal and rotational, where I'm not leaping off one leg, going flying or whatever it is. I'm very like balanced to where when I drop, everything's kind of centered and then explodes and I kind of stay in one place. So I think just my ability of really like fat, like just snapping my hips so fast, it pulls my upper body around just so quickly. And at least from what other players on the tour have said is they like to say I've got the fastest hips in the sport. Scientifically, I don't know that, but I'm just really good at pulling my body hard with that, where a lot of other people probably have fast hands or fast upper bodies like the baseball players, because a lot of guys play pro baseball and, you know, they have really fast core speed and they tend to have really fast speeds out the gate, but they tend to struggle to climb in the speed charts as they want to hit new PRs because they're not incorporating that lower body as well as they should. So there's all kinds of benefits to different swings.
From a numbers perspective, when you're training, I'm guessing you're using a launch monitor. What numbers do you focus on like most in your training? I mean, obviously we're trying to get distance and ball speed the most, but like what parameters are you looking at the most on a launch monitor to monitor like your progress and your swing mechanics?
If I'm doing speed, the only thing I'm looking at is ball speed and club speed. If my smash factor is terrible, I look at ball speed because I'm trying to just hit it more efficiently. If I'm trying to just gain raw speed and potential, I'm looking at club speed. So anytime I'm doing a speed session, it's those two metrics. Every day when I'm just training, I'm looking at spin axis as well as club path and face to path. I try to keep my, like, ideally, I'd like to have a club path that's, I'm a right-handed golfer, a club path that's 4 degrees to the right with a club face 2 degrees shut to the path. And if I can produce like a -3 spin axis, which looks like almost a straight ball, but it's just falling left, that's like the ideal shot for me. And so those regular training days, I'm looking at that. And then if I have days where my spin axis is terrible, but my club path, face to path ratio are great, and I hit it in the center of the face, but it's like a -30 spin axis, my ball's like flying hard left, sometimes like that's just because my hands are too low. And so I'll have to like raise my hands at impact to kind of neutral out the face, and that kind of straightens me up. So, I mean, there's little things like that I look at on TrackMan. But just the metrics that show how I'm delivering the club are probably the biggest, because the ball doesn't care how you get there. It doesn't care what your swing looks like on the way. The ball just knows it got hit and how it got hit. And so I can control the impact metrics. That's the biggest thing.
Interesting. When it comes to your speed sessions, from my understanding, a lot of what we're trying to do here is train the central nervous system and get used to going faster. Tell us a little bit about the process, the rationale behind the process, and like how many golf balls you're hitting, for how long, rests you're incorporating, anything like that.
So for speed training, the faster you get, the less you'll be able to hit, because it's just going to be more and more wear and tear on the body. Starting out, if you're trying to build like 130 miles per hour club speed, which is crazy fast still, people, you know, there's always people that swing it fast. There's people swinging faster than me, but 130 miles per hour is very fast. Training it like 3 to 4 times a week, four, maybe it might be a stretch, but like 3 times a week for speed, where you spend 50 to 75 balls, do like a 25 ball warm up, make sure your body's warm and loose first. And then you might change the launch monitor or whatever to, okay, we're doing 50 balls or 75 balls. And my one goal is to swing as hard as I can. And it's good to do it inside, because if you hit outside, your brain will see the flight. And whether you care about it or not, it's subconsciously going to try to control the ball flight. So if you snap hooked it, trying to push speed, your brain's going to like subconsciously slow down for a little bit of control. But when you're indoors, it just hits a screen and you can swing freely. So pretty much everybody that has a PR or knows their PR for ball speed, it's inside. But three times a week, 50 to 75 balls, your one goal is to move that club through the air as fast as you can, no regards to where the ball's hitting, no regards to if you almost scold it with your driver. That's part of it. I mean, you're swinging as fast as you can. That's not what you're used to. Your body's not used to it. You're trying to push it past its comfort. But the goal there is to just teach your nervous system to wake up, to fire faster, like incorporate more muscles, better nerve innervation, just – we're trying to be as snappy as we can to move this club as fast as we can. And like, if I don't speed train all the time, and it's almost the same feeling of if you go to the gym consistently, you're getting stronger, you're feeling good, then you don't work out for 3 weeks and then you go, or 4 weeks, and then you go back into the gym, and all of a sudden the weight you used to move, you can't even lift it. And then you're trying to lift, you know, a little bit less and it hurts, but you're like, okay, wow, I'm weak. But then you stay in the gym for about a week or so, getting back into it, and all of a sudden all the strength's back. And you're like, oh, I'm back into my routine. It's kind of like that with speed. If I don't stay on top of it, my body will kind of like cool down and go back to like this rest mode. I'm not firing as fast. So if I need to gain speed, it's okay, let me get back swinging fast, teach my body like, hey, we need to lock back in. We're pushing speed again. So staying on top of speed training and not letting your body kind of reset and pushing it to where it's, and I was telling Cooper and Jack, it's hard to judge when your nervous system's fresh. You can judge with your muscles, you can kind of feel it out with lactic acid and just raw strength, how you feel. But when your nervous system's fresh, I haven't really found a great way. I don't think a lot of others have, of how to judge that. I mean, maybe reaction time. I was thinking about that. Maybe that could be a way to judge it. But just pretty much pushing your body, though, to adapt is the biggest thing, and staying on top of it.
Are there any implements that you use in order to train? You're working out in the gym. You're building what we might call the base, in terms of you have some hypertrophy. You're building a larger muscle base potentially. But in terms of what your gym time looks like, and then any other like implements you might use to try to get yourself faster, do you have anything?
I've never been one to use a ton of like swing training aids. Right now in the gym during the season, I will lift heavy weight, but not a lot of reps. And it kind of keeps my muscles in check for like my strength and keeps my body adapted to that. I use this device called Pure Torque, and it's like a training device that allows me to train my rotational strength. So I don't have to try to translate strength from squat and bench and rows to a rotational swing and time it up. It's just, I'm training that core strength using a weight stack in this tool. And that allows me to, it's one of my favorite devices for training for speed, or just having a really strong core that allows me to translate that kinetic energy through my back and spine efficiently. But other than that, I've kind of had a very basic plan for training for speed, just hit the gym to get as strong as I can, but protect my body and then swing the club really fast. Never really done any overweight training or you know, like underweighted training, just moving a very lightweight stick practically. I haven't really done a lot of that stuff to help out my speed. Maybe I could benefit, but I've had a lot of success without it. So I don't want to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, they say. So
you played in a lot of golf tournaments growing up. So you know how different tournament golf is from just going out and playing golf, like with your buddies on Sunday afternoon. Is it similar in long drive? Is it harder to compete in a tournament as opposed to just smashing balls on the range? Or is it more just kind of a display of your raw ability?
It's definitely harder than I ever expected it to be. I thought as a fast golfer, I could just show up, hit the ball hard, some good drives, and be done with it. But in my first championship, I lost by like 40 yards. And I was hitting it fast. I was at that time like 143 miles per hour club speed, hitting the ball like 208, 210. And I thought I'd smoke these guys when I was going to be easy. No, I lost by like 40 yards. I was like, man. And I hit some OB. And I used to never miss fairways pretty much. But when it came to that grid, and any long driver, I will say, if you asked him like in front of a long drive grid, hey, just get one in. Doesn't matter how far it is. Every long driver pretty much could just, I say, bunt one in probably like 340 to 350 yards and it just go right down the middle or like right in the fairway. But what stinks when you see it sometimes, it's like, oh, he hit it out of bounds. And it's like, well, we could hit it in very easily a shorter distance, but our goal is to hit it as hard as we can and as far as we can. And just try to control it. Like, you can't always practice at your max speed because every time you're trying to push top speed, you're always going to keep increasing and you're going to bring the floor up and everything. So if you're trying to swing at top speed, your body's never prepared for that. Once I got out there on the grid, I quickly learned once you have the adrenaline pumping. So in tournament golf, if you had any adrenaline, you know, I didn't want to like juice a 7-iron extra 15 yards. So I'd have to learn to control it and chill out. But in long drive, it's almost the same pressure, but the opposite. You actually have to tap into it and use it to hit further because the guy next to you just ripped his drive 420 yards with his adrenaline and everything, and it's gone. And I'm now like, okay, I've been hitting it 390 yards all day. Now I've got to hit it 421 plus. And it's like, and I got to hit it straight. And I got two balls left to do it. It's a whole different type of pressure, but it's definitely up there with tournament golf or pro golf just because of how you've got to manage it. But instead of having to tamp it down and control it and stay cool, it's almost like you've got to let it go and be max testosterone, max speed, just all out. But I had a buddy who's a scratch golfer. He's like maybe actually a plus one handicap. He came out to a long drive event this year at the beginning. I was like, oh man, you hit it fast. You're like 133 miles per hour club speed. Very fast, plus one handicap. I finally convinced him to come out to the tournament. He competed in just the qualifier for the world championship. So you're not playing against the pros, you're just qualifying. And I think he finished like 30th of the 32-man field. And he hits it far, and he was just sitting there like, dude, I didn't realize, one, how much stress I'd be under out there. I was always kind of joking with you, like, oh, I could do it. And he goes, I didn't realize, one, how much stress I'd be under, and two, how far these guys actually hit it. He goes, sometimes you see on TV they hit it only 350 yards, but now I understand it's because they were hitting into a 20 mile per hour headwind. And even though people don't care about the conditions, they just see the numbers like, oh, I could do that. And he was like, dude, once I got out here and then you hit in the same conditions as them and you see how it affects everybody, he goes, it's unreal. And then that's when he had more appreciation for what I do. But man, I jumped away from your question, but yeah, it's similar pressures. But you kind of go the other way with having to let it all out, let it go versus control.
Could you talk about the tee shot strategy when you're in a competition? So you've got, I think it's a 60-yard wide grid, essentially fairway, and you have to hit it for it to count. Are you centering your dispersion over the middle of it? Or are you aiming to a side and trying to hit your draw to curve onto it? Like, what is your philosophy on trying to get it onto the grid at max speed?
Yeah, so you need to know your shot shape, and you kind of have to commit to it so you don't double cross. Because from the tee box to about 400 yards, if you're off by like 2 degrees of angle on your aim, your ball's OB. Like you have to know where your ball's starting and where the shot you're hitting. Because like if I'm hitting a draw, and like for the day, balls are carrying about 390 yards on a certain day, I'm trying to aim on a straight line OB at like 410 yards or 405 yards. So I know, okay, I'm going to hit a draw, but at worst, if it goes straight, it's going to land in and then roll towards that 410, which will probably be enough for a rollout unless it rolls further than that. Or I can turn it over and send it up the grid really far. Some days, like our last few tournaments, I played a shot where I aimed straight up the grid. My goal was to hit it as straight as possible, and then any error would maybe lead the ball to fall just right or just left and stay in. Some people know they can hit a draw. Sometimes it might be too much of a draw, but they know they'll turn the ball over. They'll aim out right and just then same with people that hit a fade. But a lot of times it's all determined by the conditions. If I got a crosswind off the right, if it's downwind, if it's a headwind, just like in golf and how you would hit an approach shot or a tee shot, I'm doing the same thing out there, but not just about, okay, how do I play these conditions to not just hit it in like you would in golf, but okay, how do I play these conditions to hit it in and get every inch out of this ball? You know, where's the absolute best way to penetrate this wind or ride this wind or, you know, cut through the rain, or is it raining too much to where I've got to go all carry, the ball is not rolling at all, and change my launch angle. So all my decision making is done prior to the tee box, and then on the tee box, depending on, you know, the wind just shifted all of a sudden.
What is your golf game, like your normal golf game, look like now that you do World Long Drive?
My golf game is a work in progress. I recently decided to start picking up my irons again because, funny enough, like I said, I was burned out on golf, jumped into long drive, and literally the first 2 years in the sport doing long drive, I didn't golf. I had clubs in my bag for aesthetics, so it looked all nice and presented well, but I was like, I don't want to golf. I hate it. I'm burned out. I just hit the ball far. Now I'm starting to get the bug again. I've been fortunate enough to go do some YouTube videos with some really big content creators, and that kind of got me, you know, the juice is flowing again, especially when you hit a couple bad shots on the channel and you're like, like I could fix this. So right now I'm probably like, I went out and played a really short course. It was like 6,400 yards. And I shot even par first day out after a while trying to play golf, but I didn't touch my driver. That's the funny thing. I was like, we're hitting just 4 iron off the tees, fairway green, fairway green. And then I have days, though, where, like, I was even par on the front nine at one of our other courses with, like, 3 birdies. I'm like, oh, it's a good day. And the back nine, I shot 12 over. So I decided to go for, like, every single green my driver. My buddy's like, you got to do it. Oh, yeah. Last time I do that. But I'm an entertainer. You know, they want to see me hit it far. I'm like, I got you. I don't care. So, you know, and I'll hit a fade that just – I'm aiming up the left side of this fairway. It's like 40 yards wide and the whole right side's OB trees. And I hit a draw or a fade and it's floating up there for so long, like 190 foot apex. And just, you just slowly watch it fade, bounce, OB. Like, you have to be so tight with your shots hitting it that far because it's up in the air for so long. It's just, you're bound to have errors. So
100%. When it comes to like actually playing golf, who do you think of the guys who compete on World Long Drive? Who do you think's game carries over best to actually like playing, you know, normal golf?
Oh, Jacob Galladay. He's the first guy I think of. His handle's Jesus of Golf. He played in that Mickelson Invitational they had this past weekend, and I think he won the creator part or the amateur part, but he consistently competes in the U.S. Open qualifiers each year. He plays the USAM tournaments. He shot like a 68. The first day of that tournament, he placed like maybe a +2 or +3, maybe a four might be a stretch, but like 3 handicap. And I mean, we did an ESPN event the other day. He's on my team and he was hitting like 390 yards. He might not have the all out go for broke speed that's like the random huge ball, but he's got it down where he's kind of got that balance between good golf and long drive. And I know Berkshire's been working on it too, but I haven't seen his state of his game anytime recently.
Equipment-wise, what does it look like to optimize equipment? You talked about, you know, before I was using a 45-inch driver. Now I assume it's a 48-inch driver with like 4.5 degrees of loft. Tell me kind of what optimizing equipment looks like for you with long drive.
The first month of me having a 48-inch shaft, I swung it 3 miles per hour slower. I thought I'd just grab it and start like letting it go. No, it was learning the timing of that shaft and the way it loads and unloads is not easy. Everybody I let hit the driver's like, man, this thing's like a workout, you know? But what little did I know, like my driver getting into long drive was a soup can. It was like convex. It was terrible, but I didn't know any better. I was like, this is my driver. It's flat. Now in long drive, I'll go through like two new heads every like 3 weeks, just because even though it looks like a brand new head, if the bulge and roll of the face just gets too flat for me to where I lose the full benefit of gear effect from the toe or the heel, I get a new head. So I've got like a bone guard of these brand new looking long drive heads I just don't always touch. But when it comes to my equipment, I have, we talk in terms of CPM. So instead of generalizing it to stiff, extra stiff, and so on, we talk in terms of like 200 CPM, 205, 206, 207, 208, all the way to like 230, and then extra stiff, you know, like 275, 280. But like we talk in every little number. So I know exactly the CPM, like the exact stiffness of the shaft I want to hit, especially for the different conditions. If it's downwind, I might go with a shaft that's a double kick point, which has a kick point near the grip and the head, as well as a softer flex, which might be closer like a regular or a senior flex, because now I can get more kick and actually get a little extra spin on the ball to help me ride the wind a little bit more and float even further. Then I have like a super stiff shaft that's like a piece of rebar and it's heavy, but I'll have it for like incredible headwinds where it is just impossible to get the ball down. I can just rip this low spin penetrator. But like that shaft is so taxing on the body because it's like a workout swinging it. I make sure my head weight, I usually play just the standard weight in the back and play my driver head at neutral, but I like it playing at neutral. So I have the adjustability to either go up or down or a degree or two to change depending on the conditions. I always carry lead tape on me because any given moment in a day, I will throw lead tape on there just to work with the swing I've got that day. Even though my swing might look the exact same, you know, feels are different. That's golf. Everybody knows that. And so if I'm hitting, I'm like, okay, I'm not hitting it as well as I could, but I've got to maximize distance and I'm having trouble stalling the toe and I'm turning over drives. I might lead tape up the toe just to keep the face open a little longer or this, that, and the other. But I'm always checking like the face to make sure it's not too flat. I'm always checking, make sure my driver head's tight because those will loosen up on you sneakily. I'll change weights in the back of the head if I need more spin. The shaft, you know, I'm playing with that depending on wind conditions or just atmospheric conditions or just feel. Maybe I don't like the way that shaft feels today. The grip I play is like not, like 28 grams. And I play that to give me like my certain swing weight. I think it's like D4 I like usually. I mean, so I'm always monitoring every little piece of my driver, just like maybe obviously not to that extreme, but like F1 racers are like managing every little weight and bit of their car to max it out. I'm doing the same with my driver to get as much as I can out of a drive because that's the goal at the end of the day. I've lost a world championship last year by 1 yard, and it's just, you know, every inch matters. So it's crazy.
Which brand head are you using?
I use the Callaway Elite long drive head. It's 4.5 degree stock shafts. I use Patterson Kinetics shafts. They've got phenomenal shafts. They've helped me out so far in my long drive career for the last 2 years. And I play them in my gamer heads at like 45 inches and I play them in long drive, but they have shafts that are single kick point. They have shafts that are double kick point, if you're not familiar, double kick point, a shaft like the auto flex shaft, I'm sure you've heard about, that's a double kick point shaft. And those two have been my biggest equipment helps. And I think they've got the most wins on long drive tour, you know, since it really started.
What are the launch parameters of like your personal best drive, like club head speed, ball speed, smash factor, and spin rate and launch? If you happen to know this off the top of your head, I think people would be curious to.
All the metrics of like my individual best drive, I couldn't tell you. I could tell you more of like the best, like my fastest ball speed in competition has been 228.4 miles per hour. Spin rate was a little spinny on the shot at like, I think 2,263 RPMs, which I would rather have been like 1,900 at 228 miles per hour, like 1,800 spin. but that's just the nature of the beast. Of the faster you hit it, the sweet spot of the clubs gets smaller and smaller because like you can't afford to miss hit it because of over compression of the golf ball and other metrics. But like ideal launch conditions at sea level, I'm probably trying to launch it at 14 degrees with 2000 spin, about 1900 spin and 225 miles per hour ball speed. And then I just want my spin axis to be as little as possible so I can hit it as straight as possible. That's kind of like ideal launch there. But I hit with the one-stop power shop, who the coach is Bobby Peterson. He builds my equipment. He coaches like 8 of the top 10 like long drivers in the world, plus many others. We run the ballistic calculations of the golf ball at those locations before each tournament. So just like a sniper would calculate the ballistics of his bullet for how far he's got to shoot this shot, you know, where to aim. We do the same with the golf ball and his software. He's got it for like the 332 dimple pattern ball and all that. We look at, okay, we're competing in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. It looks like as of now, it's going to be based on like a condition of 80 degrees outside, no rain, no wind. This is the exact metrics you got to hit. And we calculate it for someone that's hitting at 200 miles per hour, 210 miles per hour, 215, 220, 225, just so you know, okay, this is my speed bracket. This is the shot I'm trying to hit. When I'm on the range warming up, I need to try to get this launch and this spin and then go out there and rip it. But then in the moment, things change. All of a sudden, it starts raining. Wind starts blowing. It's hotter than we thought. So when we're calculating even those numbers the best we can, but it's not that we can hit those numbers perfectly, but we try to replicate them the best we can.
What does nutrition look like for you during a tournament? And then also before, how much attention do you guys pay to that?
During the tournament, during tournaments, I definitely eat a lot better than I do outside. I'm usually the night before eating probably some kind of chicken or pasta meal just to get a lot of carbs in me. Because once I start competing the next day, it's nonstop. Usually if I'm moving on, fortunate enough to get to like top 8, top 4, so on, I don't really ever get time for a lunch break. So tournament day, I'm waking up. Usually I'm eating hotel eggs at like 6 a.m. right when that food opens. I'll hit the gym at like 5 a.m. hotel eggs, and I'll eat like a waffle there with syrup and all that to get a lot of like sugar and energy in me, carbs. Then I go out there, I compete in round one. If I can get a meal, awesome. I'll probably eat like a Chipotle or something. Just get rice, chicken, keep it clean and simple. Hit my just basic protein and carb needs. If I can eat, I'll probably snack on beef jerky. And then I roll into the next round. It's just nonstop hydration because, I mean, I'm swinging as hard as I can for like 6 hours during a tournament day. And my body's slap worn out. I have a Whoop, and my Whoop was telling me at the end of our Nevada tournament, Mesquite, I was out there from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. competing, and my Whoop told me between just that window for that activity, it said I burned like 5,800 calories, and my heart rate was riding at like 160 miles per hour for like, 160 beats per minute for like 5 hours. I'm like, man, I don't know if that's healthy, but like, I was charged, you know. I'm living off monsters and adrenaline for like 5 hours. Then you get to the hotel and just crash. But my diet's definitely a little bit tighter. And during tournaments, it's boring. Just meals that are simple with high protein, high carbs. And then outside of tournaments, it's probably a little bit dirtier. I still pick my meals based around, you know, okay, if I go to eat Mexican, I want fajitas to get my protein in. And then I'm going to just destroy chips and salsa. So that's just me. I blame it on having a power gut or whatever I want to blame it on. But it's definitely tight, but I'm not super anal about it.
Do you think caffeine helps you during competition swing faster?
I would say for me, yes. Some people, I think, don't need caffeine because it actually would make them too jittery and they can barely tee a ball up. They'll be like trying to tee it up and they're nervous and the adrenaline, the caffeine, they can't even tee a ball up. But one of the big things is getting your heart rate elevated, having a really high heart rate allows for more blood flow, quicker blood flow, better oxygen transfer, and your body just runs way more efficiently. And so sometimes I'm not, like, if I don't have my heart rate up, right, there's days where I'm just kind of like chill, like having a good time, happy to be there. I'm like my slowest in a tournament. I'm struggling to get speed because I'm like too chill. I'm not like nervous and ramped up and just trying to murder a ball. So caffeine helps me to like get my heart rate up to kind of like pre-charge my battery, get me going. And then I can like climb from there and get over the top of just being like wired and heart racing, blood pumping, ripping drives. So it does help, I'd say, more so to like jumpstart everything.
Kind of leading into tournament prep, I'm guessing like a week out from a tournament, how does your training change so you're optimized for that night's competition? Like, are you getting more flexibility? Are you changing your workout lifts and your speed training? What does that look like, say, a week out up until competition day?
So I'll still do my normal training routine, but I will stop working out 5 days out before competition just to start my taper, just so my body now has time to heal up, recover, and be as fresh as possible for the first day I hit. But I'm definitely doing my normal stretching routine and stuff prior to that, all the way through a tournament and during a tournament. So even though I stop working out 5 days prior to a tournament, I'll stop hitting 2 days before my first day hitting, to where I will probably, if I compete Friday, I'm going to stop hitting Tuesday. So I'll hit probably the last time I hit Monday, recover Tuesday, recover Wednesday, show up, stop hitting Tuesday, recover Wednesday, recover Thursday, then I'm hitting balls Friday. But all throughout that, I'm still stretching, making sure I'm loose, making sure I'm flexible and ready, but I'm just letting my body recover and be prepared to fire on Friday. I do manage how my recovery periods look, but I don't want to do it too long out to where if I stop training a week and a half out to let my body recover, well, then I enter that recovery stage where like my body's not primed and ready to swing fast, and it started kind of going back down with the speed, and I got to wake it back up. So just, it's a fine window.
Do you have an off season at all?
Depends on when our championship ends. Some year, like last year, our championship ended August. This year it's going to end in September, but the off season is usually October to March. But even throughout the off season, I'll go do exhibition events for people, go hit. I'm going to try to start doing more content this year. I just want to kind of get my footing in long drive more, just kind of as like a foundation for why, you know, you should watch my content instead of just who's this guy hits it for or whatever. But we do have a pretty healthy off season, and usually that's when everybody does the really heavy lifting, the weight gain. But then after they do that initially, then they do like the heavy speed push probably a month or two out from the first tournament. They don't push speed heavy at the start. They like to kind of give their body that foundation of putting on mass and muscle. And then, okay, let's now teach it to move quickly.
Which of the traditional lifts, like barbell lifts that everybody knows about, do you think is most beneficial to hitting it far?
Probably deadlifts. I do a lot of single leg, like split lunges and stuff. But I think deadlifts with, obviously you're lifting a lot with your legs and you're getting a lot of your back and core involved. You're just strengthening up a lot of your posterior chain and your core, which is good for just strength in the swing and then allowing your body to be protected. And then just leg strength and glute strength. And that's just where a lot of the ground forces start, is with your lower body. So if you can have a lot of control and strength with that, you should have probably get the most out of your swing.
Do you have a goal of a deadlift that you want to get to before next season?
Oh, I'd love to get to like 500 pounds, but a lot of the stuff I deal with. So the ski wreck I got in, I actually developed a hip injury from that, as well as like, I think that led to some low back pain I have. So even though I'm dealing with pains that everybody deals with, you know, just back and hip pain, I'm still swinging through it and hitting the ball really far. But I wouldn't say the pain I'm dealing with is from long drive, you know, because that a lot of people are like, oh, well, yeah, you're swinging that fast, you're going to get hurt. Well, there's plenty of guys that have done it now. They're like 50 swinging at 200 miles per hour, 220 miles per hour, and they're fine. Because if you have good mechanics and you take care of yourself, you can survive that. But right now, I'm just trying to kind of navigate the little aches and pains I'm dealing with from the ski wreck that are kind of flaring back up and addressing that. So I don't really have too many goals on strength right now until I get that corrected, because I don't want to, you know, no pain, no gain in the gym, and next thing you know, I'm just out of the sports, I'm injured. So. But yeah, probably like a 500-pound deadlift and 300-pound bench press for me. I'm not the strongest by far compared to some of these monsters in the sport.
You take any supplements?
I take creatine and just protein. Basic dude. I would love to have more supplements, you know, but
how many grams of creatine?
I do 10 milligrams right now. is it grams or milligrams? I don't know. I just do like
2 grams. Milligrams would be tiny. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I do the 10 grams, I guess, for that week to load. And then I usually do like maybe 5 milligrams every day after that, just as maintenance. But I'm on creatine all the time. I think it's a phenomenal, supplement, not substance.
Yeah. It's a substance. It is a substance too.
It is definitely my favorite by far of all the supplements alongside just protein. Yeah. That's probably the most popular.
Yeah. Yeah. And so 10 grams is about a tablespoon. Right. That's how I measure it off a tablespoon. Is that about how do you measure your grams?
The one I have right now, usually I do the same as you. It'd be the tablespoon. But right now I've got this micronized creatine HCL for better delivery. I don't know, just some stuff that was fed to me. But I'm like, all right, yeah, I like this stuff. And I've noticed some results with it, so I've been using it. But OG, I start out with just the creatine monohydrate. It tastes like sand. It doesn't really blend with the water, and you just mix it enough to suspend it and you chug it. So
I don't even do it. I just pour water in my mouth and dump that on top. And
you're just otherwise,
it's too much. Like it's just like grit in your teeth.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Very good. Well, as we get to the end of the show, I think the last question we ask every guest is kind of the same. And for you, it's going to be unique. It's going to be two part. One, if you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be? And two, if you could tell a junior golfer just one thing, what would that one thing be?
So I'll probably relate it to what I do now, the whole speed stuff. I would tell a junior golfer to, and it sounds so dumb, but like swing hard. It's once you're like out of these speed windows, it's really hard to build speed unless you're kind of naturally on the faster end of the speed. Like you're pushing for 130. So I assume you're probably swinging at like 120s.
Yeah. Yeah. I started at 118.9 and I don't want to give away where I'm at right now, 'cause I'm a little behind between, but I'll tell you afterwards, but I've picked up a lot or a decent bit.
Yeah. And so like you have natural speed, but someone that's like cruising at 105, it's going to be really hard to build speed. Your body's just not developed like that. But I tell junior golfers to just swing really fast, be athletic, and then kind of rope, like dial that in. Don't go for the robotic, super tight, just accurate swing, which is great. But in the end, speed is going to be something you want. Everybody loves speed. And what I tell myself is just don't have fear of trying new things in competition. Like I did junior golf, but when I started pursuing like doing like high school golf and wanting to go to college, I kind of had this fear of competing because I never felt ready. I was always just, I need to be better. I need to work on the range more. My swing's not perfect. And that analysis or paralysis by analysis and just the fear of being perfect completely locked all that up. And I would just tell them like, don't be afraid to try new things or compete. Go out there, do it. Those experiences are what build you. There's nothing to prepare you for that. And I know people in business and real estate, they all have similar sayings of just do it. You know, just there's nothing like actually competing or investing to learn. And you're going to trip. You're going to fall. That's life. We're humans. But being able to experience it makes you better, best prepared for encountering it again.
Absolutely. Where can people find you on social media and follow along?
So right now on Instagram, it's JackSmith_LD. There's so many Jack Smiths in this world. I kept typing until one worked, and that one worked for Instagram. And then for YouTube, it's just Jack Smith Golf right now.
Excellent. Excellent. If you're listening to us right now on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, make sure to like, subscribe, leave a rating. If you're trying to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on Twitter/X at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you joining us and look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.